Hello, Internet, and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions, the ones that you leave in the comments section of my videos, or have sent to me by email on askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I'm very happy with the results of this so far. I've had, just so everybody out there knows, I've been inundated with questions. I have enough to answer 20 of these shows, and I'm going to keep going on this, and if I haven't gotten to your question yet, it's not because I don't like it, it's because I just haven't gotten to it yet, because I have so many, and I don't particularly have a lot of rhyme and reason as to how I choose these. You know, there's been nothing but good news lately with this Alex Gibney documentary, Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief, out now for a week. The media reaction has been beyond anything I ever could have dared to hope for, in a very good way. It's the satire videos now, last night's Saturday Night Live parody, and the other parodies that we see coming out on this really, really say a lot about where Scientology is at now in the public perception, and that's a very good place for it to be. Not only the satire, but also the hard questions now getting asked for real by all the media outlets that really need to be asking about their tax exemption, about how Tom Cruise or John Travolta could be turning a blind eye to the abuses and the human rights violations that are pretty much a daily life within the church, especially at its highest levels. So this is very exciting and very, very satisfying to me personally. And I'm happy that I've been able to be some small contributor to this activity, so it's been fun. So let's get to your questions and see what kind of answers I can give you. Here we go. Curtis Powell, I'm guessing that your YouTube blog has exploded in popularity after the Going Clear documentary appeared on HBO this week. Kudos to you for keeping this conversation going. I'm becoming obsessed. This unraveling is and will continue to be super fascinating. Question. The comment has been made online that cults don't often end well. Do you fear or suspect that as this church, aka cult, goes over the cliff, that members will drink the proverbial Kool-Aid, take up arms, or fill in the bad ending blank here? No, I don't particularly see or predict a violent ending or one filled with death and destruction for Scientology. It's a very dispersed activity for one. It's all over the world. While there's not lots and lots of members, they are in lots and lots of locations all around the world. And so the idea that there's going to be some central gathering and they're all going to, like, you know, slit their wrists or drink Kool-Aid or something, is not very realistic. Also, something to keep in mind about Scientology and Scientologists is that there's a kind of narcissism that is a thread that runs throughout Scientology, and this has been commented on. I've written about it myself on my blog, and it's sort of a religion or a philosophy of ego, because it's all about improving yourself to the point where people will give up their family, their friends, their loved ones in order to achieve their own personal spiritual freedom. If that's not the height of egotism, I don't know what is. So these are not people who are inclined to particularly do away with themselves or kill themselves for the greater good or something. It's not necessarily the mindset. And while there could, I could see or foresee some sort of a disastrous occurrence maybe at the international base in Hemet, California, but that's a little hard for me to really swallow or really take seriously. I think that this is going to go out with a whimper, way more than I think this is going to go out with a bang. How it will happen, there are so many predictions, so many guesses, so many ways it could happen that I feel it's a little folly to try to get into the specifics of, you know, this is going to happen and this is going to happen and this is going to happen. But I do think that when Scientology's core, when it centrally does fall apart, or no longer has access to the bank accounts, like if Miscavige were to take off, for example, and everything just kind of fell apart centrally, then what you're going to really have is just a bunch of people wondering what the hell just happened, and they're going to devolve into a bunch of independent Scientology movements, and then the way the most people go, in that evolution is you get out of Scientology, you still believe in Scientology, you still want it to be true, you still believe in L. Ron Hubbard maybe, and so you're using the technology for a while, and then you find out even more about L. Ron Hubbard, more about its evolution and its roots and whatnot, and then you eventually sort of just give the whole thing up and move on with your life. And that's a way oversimplified way of putting it, but that's sort of a progression of how people can leave the church. And I think we're going to see a lot more sort of just people fading away from that as it goes. I don't think we're going to see any kind of violent, okay, everybody, let's all get together and kill ourselves now. That's not really in their nature. So there you go. Barbara Braid. I'm a Neverin and have a question for you. Some time ago, I was contacted by Scientology trying to update their mailing list. I politely told the woman she had the wrong person and goodbye. Then the harassment started. Calls at all hours, texts, etc. I scoured the blogs for information and advice. I finally just blocked numbers and didn't answer any unknown calls. I also turned my phone off at night. Here's the thing. I went from someone who didn't have an opinion about Scientology, sure, Tom Cruise is weird, but he's also an actor and you expect a bit of oddity, to someone who now is working to eliminate a dangerous cult. So here's my question. Why didn't Scientology go away when they had confirmation that they had the wrong person? By their own admission, the person they were looking for was in another city. Okay, Barbara, well, the deal is that Scientology, one, is extremely desperate for to recover or get back anyone they think ever did anything with Scientology. One of the things they tell each other within the Scientology bubble world is everybody's a Scientologist and they just don't know it yet. So when they find people, and right now for the last, about 10 years or so, they have really been on a roll to try to get back anyone who's ever expressed any interest in Scientology. Now this has been fairly disastrous for them because of situations like you describe, where they're calling people who never had anything to do with Dianetics or Scientology, but they happen to have the same name as somebody who did. And what they've been doing is skip tracing, they've been paying to get the databases and information and phone numbers and text and email addresses to try to reach the people that they think were at one time interested in Scientology, and they try to call these people, and then they try to sell them things. The basic books and the lectures, and they try to actually have this package where they try to sell somebody over the phone thousands of dollars worth of materials from, L. Ron Hubbard lectures and books. So that effort has been ongoing for quite some time. And, of course, because it's Scientology, the way they go about it is totally ham-fisted, and they don't keep very good records. They have a call center type setup in Los Angeles and in Clearwater, I've been in them, I worked in them. And in those call center setups, they have computer systems, they have databases, they have phone notes, but people don't necessarily read them. Those phone notes don't necessarily get distributed, or the person who's on the phone with you didn't keep any phone notes, actually, and there's nothing saying that they did. And so you'll get the situation where people get called over and over and over again because they are so desperate. And the people who are doing the calling are under such pressure to reach people and sell them something and get them back in. They think that they're doing the Lord's work by recovering people to the goodness and brilliance of Scientology. And they're very passionate about their work. So they are going to call and call and call, because if the first time didn't do it, well, maybe the second time will. And if the second time didn't do it, maybe the third time will. This reminds me of a policy letter that L. Ron Hubbard wrote, where he talked about letter writing and how you write letters to people who have done services and now are not doing Scientology services, and they keep files of these things. They literally have manila folders, with stacks of these letters that get written to people over the years. So, and he says, you keep writing to these people, you keep calling, you keep contacting them until they threaten legal, until they threaten to take legal action. If they don't do that, you just keep going, because it could be 10 letters, it could be 100 letters before they finally respond to you and come back in. And that's the theory that they're operating on. And it's a pretty silly thing to do, because what they end up doing is antagonizing the hell out of people and making enemies. And Scientology is, I am fascinated by the brilliance with which that organization makes its own enemies. They did it with me, they've done it with almost every other ex-Scientologist I've ever met in some way or another, and they just can't seem to have a live and let live kind of policy where, you know, if you don't want to do Scientology, it's okay with them. You know, it's not okay with them. And they want to know why, and they want you to explain yourself, and they want to convince you of its greatness. And if you've ever expressed any interest, well, then clearly you wanted it at one time, so you should still want it. Anyway, and that's what's going on there. So the only way to, you know, really get them off your plate, get them to stop calling you, is actually to threaten them with taking legal action. I've also heard that chanting OT materials at them, like the whole OT3 Xenu story, also is kind of effective at getting them to stop calling you, because they don't want to hear that. So, Jeffrey Enna, I'm a huge fan, follower of your YouTube channel. In your opinion, why aren't the police or the FBI looking into Scientology's torture claims more thoroughly, or raiding the Gold Base and rescuing all the parishioners? And why aren't ex-Scientologists that were physically abused by David Miscavige moving forward with assault and battery charges? I mean, the government has task forces for anti-human trafficking and child abuse. Why do you feel Scientology and David Miscavige are so untouchable? Okay, Jeff, well, it's not that they're necessarily untouchable, but I do understand your point. And this was actually something taken up in the HBO documentary as well. And the point is that the FBI actually was investigating the Church of Scientology at one point, a few years ago, and there was a court case that was lost on the human trafficking in California, and it was lost because of First Amendment freedom of religion. And the Church is, you know, has this this First Amendment protection, and it allows them to get away with things that they really shouldn't be allowed to get away with. I kind of have my own opinions about, you know, First Amendment protections and whatnot. There's lots of, you know, I'm not going to say that it should just be, you know, canceled or something, but in the case of something like Scientology, it certainly needs some review. Scientology never should have been, you know, granted tax exemption and First Amendment privileges in the first place, but, you know, whatever. So that is a problem for the courts, because a judge cannot get into judging or making value judgments about a person's religious beliefs. And they have this line that kind of gets into this gray area where, you know, in the daily life of Scientology, if they are being abused or being, you know, there's like human rights violations going on where they're being kept up late, they're not sleeping, they're getting, you know, this torture kind of activity, because it's in the name of religion, and because the people involved agreed to it and are part of this activity and continue to be part of this activity for quite some time, it can be difficult for a judge to feel that he can then make a legal ruling about it, because he's then getting into making a legal ruling about a belief system. And that's how I understand the court dilemma in this kind of situation. And when that court case was thrown out on First Amendment issues, the FBI saw that, you know, it was not going to be a winning case for them to go raid the international base in Hemet, California, and rescue all these people, because quite honestly, what would have happened if they'd gone in there is all those people, like is said in the video or in the documentary, would have said, no, we're here on our own accord, we're willing participants in this, and you know, and no, it's all good. Now, in reality, I don't know that everybody actually would have said that, but I can certainly see how it could have happened that way and how that could go down that way, because having been a true believer myself and suffered, you know, some abuses of my own in the years that I was in Scientology, I know the mindset, and the mindset is not a good place to be. It's a very damaged place where you, like a situation with spousal abuse, you feel like you deserve what's happening to you, and it is your fault. And Scientology, as a mind control activity, is brilliant, just brilliant, at making you feel that all of the things that are happening to you that are bad or wrong or that, you know, you would never put up with in the real world out here, are happening to you because of you, not because of the person who's abusing you or who is ordering you around or ordering you to not sleep or ordering you on to not eat or whatever, you know, the orders are. You take the burden of responsibility for all of that on your shoulders, and you make it yours. And that's the mindset. And it's, you know, so if you go into that situation and you say, hey, you know, come on, we're going to free you from this. You go, well, when you're in that mindset, you're like, well, no, this is my fault. I'm being responsible for this. You know, it's right that I'm experiencing these horrible things. That's the insanity of it, and that's what we're fighting against when we're trying to reach the people who are still in this bubble world of Scientology. You know, there's different words for it. You know, and I don't pretend to understand all the psychology behind it. I can just explain my own experience with it and some of what I've learned since I've gotten out. And the best analogy I can make to it is the battered wife syndrome, you know, where she stays with the guy and stays with the guy and stays with the guy until the guy kills her because she feels like she deserves it or whatever is going through her head on that. So that's why you don't see people filing assault and battery charges against David Miscavige. They wouldn't even, it doesn't even enter their head. It's a thought that never even occurs to them to do. I was once assaulted in the church when I was in the Sea Org, and I can tell you, again, from my own personal experience, that it never entered my mind to go outside the church and go file charges with the police, although I certainly could have. I could have walked right off the base. I could have, you know, walked over to the police station or called 911. I could have done that easily. And it didn't even occur to me to do that because I knew that what had happened to me was my fault. And that I'd screwed up, that I had done something really wrong, and I'd really pissed off this, you know, senior executive of Scientology. And I'd been, you know, and I got, you know, for it. And it was all on me. So that's the best I can do on that one. Matt Kordelski. I enjoy your YouTube channel. I've watched a lot of videos from you and other ex-Scientologists. I have many, many questions, but here's one for today. Have they enforced the so-called freeloader debt? Is that something they use to scare people thinking about leaving? Or have they ever actually taken someone to court to recover these alleged debts? If so, has a judge or jury of non-Scientologists ever rewarded the church money from ex-parishioners? And can a billion-year religious contract be enforced? Okay, well, freeloader debts are the debts that they give people who have worked for the church, whether at a local organization, a Class 5 church, or at the C organization level. Either way, if you contract with them, you sign a volunteer contract. One of the points of agreement with that is that if you break your contract and leave early, then you will pay for any services that you received for free as a staff member or a Sea Org member, and that's called a freeloader debt. And they calculate that out when you leave, and they give it to you, and you're supposed to pay that back before you'll be allowed to do any further Scientology services as a non-staff member. So it's ridiculous, of course. It's just another mind control, you know, BS nonsense that Hubbard came up with in order to punish people. And it has absolutely no legal standing whatsoever. It is entirely based on Hubbard's policy. It's not based on any law of the land anywhere. And in fact, I've been told that in some states it's illegal to enforce such a thing. That you know, if you were to take Scientology to court over this, this would actually, you would not have to bear the brunt of that debt. Of course, if you took Scientology to court over that, the whole question would be moot because you'd never do any Scientology services again anyway, because the church would declare you a suppressive person. So that's just sort of doesn't really go anywhere. As far as the billion-year contract, no, of course that's not enforceable in any way, shape, or form. It's a completely voluntary thing that somebody does, and I'd like to see them try. Although, I will comment on one thing about that billion-year contract, just since people might want to know this. When somebody in the Sea organization dies, it's understood that they are granted a 21-year leave of absence, and they are expected to come back in their next life and pick back up on their contract. And this is understood within the Sea Org world. When somebody dies in the Sea Org, they issue an obituary of sorts. They have an issue, and it's called In Memoriam, and the person's name, and then they lay out who the person was and how, you know, what they did in their in the course of their Sea organization career and that sort of thing, and they break all this down, and then they say at the end, and Joe Smith is granted a 21-year leave of absence. So that's about how enforceable the billion-year contract is. David Edwards. Great videos, Chris. I often think that the dismantling of the church will be achieved not by anger, but by kindness. Your unique brand of thoughtfulness and charity is an inspiration. Here's a question for you. If Hubbard were to return to planet Earth today, what do you think he would make of the church's current state? What changes, if any, do you think he would make? And what would be the first thing he would say to David Miscavige? Okay, I'm not particularly a big fan of L. Ron Hubbard, so I don't think him coming back would be the big reform movement of Scientology that some people might think. But I mean, he did come up with Disconnection. He did come up with the Guardian's Office, which is now the Office of Special Affairs. He did come up with all of the ethics and the conditions and the justice system and all the other things, and he built those things into the DNA of Scientology. So all of that is Hubbard, and Miscavige is sort of as the person that he is, he's taken all of that and sort of amped it up to the nth degree for his own personal power. But if Hubbard came back, what do I think would happen is I think that the first thing is he would say to David Miscavige is go to the RPF, because Hubbard would be frankly horrified at the state of Scientology right now. It is no part of what's going on with Scientology right now has anything to do with what L. Ron Hubbard had as his vision of where it should go. For example, all the fundraising that's going on right now, Hubbard was absolutely not into fundraising. Now, there's people who have stories about money, and yes, he wanted money, but he expected that money from Scientology would come from selling services and selling materials. He never, ever authorized or wanted fundraising just for straight donations. He just didn't. And I've talked to a number of people about this. His policies on it are clear. He meant what he said. And when he found out that fundraising type activities were going on, he canceled them. He was not into that. Well, almost everything the church does now, it revolves around nothing but fundraising. And I'm talking about fundraising where they're just basically getting money from you for nothing. Talked about this before in detail, so I won't belabor it here, but it's pretty much all the church does now. Hubbard would be horrified by that, and he would demand that the situation turn around where they get back in the business of delivering for an exchange, meaning that they are going to sell services, auditing, training, and books and materials. So that would be a pretty major shift that I know if he saw how things were right now, he wouldn't be into that. As far as a disconnection and the, you know, the number of people who have left Scientology as a result of all the injustices and stuff, he'd probably want to put some kind of program together to get those people back by, you know, canceling their suppressive person declares and trying to get them back in the fold somehow. He wrote a policy letter called Recovering Students and PCs, where he lays out reasons why people take off, and he would try to get, you know, those things used to get people back in the fold. And, you know, who knows, if he came back and he booted Miscavige and instituted some degree of reforms, then maybe some people would come back. I wouldn't be one of them, but, you know, who knows, maybe some would. It would be a very different Scientology if he was actually running the show. But I will say that if he came back, he'd still have a lot to answer for. And he'd probably still be a tax evader, and he'd probably still be in hiding. So, you know, it's not like he'd come back and it would be the second coming of Christ, I can tell you that. Okay, so those are all the questions I want to answer for this week. Thank you very much for continuing to watch and for continuing to send me questions. Keep it up. You can send them to me in the comments section of this video, and I will get them, and I will get to them. If you haven't watched Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief, I cannot recommend it highly enough. If you have any interest in Scientology or anything having to do with Scientology, that is the go-to thing to see to get 2 hours of the most intense and accurate information on what the church's culture and attitude and life is like. It's just amazing, and I can't say enough good things about it. And I meanwhile, I'll continue taking up questions here, and I have some other things about Scientology I will be getting out, and some other subjects as well. I do want to move on past that subject. So, thank you very much for watching.